there were a lot of predictions that were made in haste, it appears now, in regards to Alaska.
Alaskans will have to wait to see who wins the state's congressional races. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 5th of November. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Palin's national stardom hasn't dimmed much, at least not yet.
We've had requests from Oprah, Letterman, Barbara Walters, 60 Minutes, on and on. This is just today.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Support for APRN coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from the Alaska Sea Life Center, Alaska's unique marine research facility and public aquarium.
It will be several days before the final vote tallies are in for the Alaska seats in the U.S. Senate and House. With more than 99% of precincts reporting, both incumbents Senator Ted Stevens and Congressman Don Young are ahead in their races. Stevens has about 1.5% lead over his Democratic challenger, Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich, and Young maintains a 7.5% lead over challenger Ethan Berkowitz. But more than 60,000 absentee early and question ballots still need to be counted. Director of Elections Gail Fanumiai says the division will work as quickly as possible to get the final numbers out.
I don't have a date set yet, but it will be no later than Friday. We're hoping to shoot for Wednesday, but it's just all a matter of getting through a lot of documents and making sure that we've done everything we can to ensure that there wasn't any duplicate voting that took place.
Even though the final count isn't in yet, the old guard in Congress is preparing to stay on the post. Don Young says the polls and pundits predicted him to lose before the votes were counted.
This has always been about the voter. Never been about Ethan or Don. It's been about the voter, and right now it looks like the voters have decided that Don Young can do the job for them like we've been able to do in the past 35 years.
Senator Stevens isn't speaking publicly today about his narrow lead over Begich. His campaign sent out a press release saying voters sent a strong message that they believe Ted Stevens will continue to be an effective advocate for them in Washington, D.C. If Stevens does win, Alaska will have the distinction of being the first state to elect a convicted felon to the Senate. Both Republican congressional candidates had persuasive backing from their party organization during the campaign. Party Chair Randy Riedrich says he saw things change in the last few days before the election.
Our voter engagement got to be a lot better the last 3 or 4 days, and our Republican base solidified after the senator came home. The congressman worked the population across the state, and the results speak for themselves.
Riedrich says the party put a lot of effort into making sure that absentee voters would turn out for the Republicans. He said he expects that much of that will reinforce the current results.
First of all, we have a huge Republican to Democrat advantage. Secondly, a significant number of these people that have voted absentee are people that we've encouraged to vote absentee because they're very solid conservatives.
But the men who work to unseat the current congressional delegation, Democrats Mark Begich and Ethan Berkowitz, are not ready to throw in the towel yet. Begich says people didn't believe him, but he has always said he expected a difficult race. He called a press conference in Anchorage today to make public the selection of a legal team to review the vote count in every district if needed.
But we have a few lawyers and also people around the region districts. But the first is just to make sure we understand the process of how they're going to verify what are ballots they're going to count. The next thing, obviously, is to observe the counting, as we have done before. You know, like I said, 6 years ago, I've been through this before on the local level. And so we just want to make sure that the process is adhered to. So, both campaigns have this. This is a normal procedure.
And Begich says the race between himself and Stevens is not over.
But keep in mind, the votes they're tallying are early voting, which was an incredible effort that we put forward in pushing voters out there to get their vote counted. If every rally we went to, we asked that question. And we really focused on early voting. And so we feel very, very confident that anyone who confuses early voting and absentee as a certain way for Republicans, I think, would be mistaken this election cycle.
Ethan Berkowitz says despite Young's large lead, he's not about to drop out with all the uncounted ballots.
We've just begun to fight, and you're going to see when results come in from rural Alaska
when they start to count the rest of the absentee ballots, you're going to start to see things tighten up considerably. I think Alaska's ready for change. We can't take another chance on Don Young. If we do that, we do it at our own peril. America has changed, Congress has changed, and Alaska just can't get left behind. Don Young will leave us behind.
Berkowitz says Alaska will pay a price for not keeping up with the rest of the United States, and he must keep doing what he can to bring about change. Joel Southern covered Senator Stevens and Congressman Young for APRN in Washington, D.C. for more than two decades. He now lives in Denmark, where he stayed up most of last night watching the returns come in. Southern says even if Stevens maintains his lead over Begich, the battle to retain his Senate seat is far from over.
I guess you can look at this situation as one of those, potentially one of, you know, winning the battle now, but perhaps losing the war later on, because both Republicans and Democrats have signaled pretty clearly the leadership of those two parties in the Senate that Stevens is going to have a hard time staying around in the Senate if he exhausts his appeals and is still found guilty. I mean, there's just no way it would seem like he could stay in the Senate.
We're in the final days of the Bush administration. What do you think Stevens' chances are for a pardon? And if that happens, how do you think that might change the way his Senate colleagues feel about him?
Well, I suspect if there's a pardon, it's going to be one last opportunity to sort of clear his name in a way. I really think he'd have a hard time staying in the Senate if there was that sort of situation. And I just think it's going to be very difficult for him anyway to have the sort of fear and respect that he's had for so many years that he's used to do what he's done. And you also have to remember that if there is a pardon situation, that's only good until January 20th, because that's when President Bush leaves office. And I really don't think that President-elect Obama would be open to the idea of a pardon. I mean, we don't know if a pardon or a clemency is going to happen, but I think there's sort of a limited shelf life on the possibility of getting one.
And Joel, what about Don Young? If his lead holds, what do you think the tone will be? What kind of landscape will he face in a much more Democratic House?
Well, he has said and repeatedly says when he's asked about this sort of thing that, you know, he's worked for a long time as an effective member of the minority. But, you know, there is a bigger hole there for Republicans in the House, and I think they're going to have a real hard time. The Alaska delegation is pushing some of their pet issues. I mean, I just don't see that, for example, the issue of Anwar oil drilling is a feasible issue to push at all for the next couple of years, because, you know, stronger Democratic majorities, House and Senate, and a Democratic president. I mean, I just don't see any way they push that unless there's some sort of big spike in oil prices.
And if Begich or Berkowitz do win, Alaska will go from having very senior members of Congress to junior members of Congress. What are their prospects to get things done and get good committee assignments in this new Congress?
Well, you can look at that a couple of different ways. I mean, if Begich and Berkowitz were to end up winning these seats, I think there would be some attention paid to them by the Democratic leadership because of having knocked off two longtime Republican incumbents. So that might be helpful to them in getting a little bit more seniority, some good committee assignment. I mean, one thing that the Alaska delegation would have to think about in that situation is, you know, Senator Stevens has been an appropriator for so many years. So, you know, would Mark Begich, for example, have a crack at getting on the Senate Appropriations Committee?
Well, we do have a new president-elect now, Barack Obama. What do you think the new Obama administration will mean for Alaska?
Well, one of the things that we're going to have to look at very immediately is this whole transition in terms of the nominees that come forward for positions that are very important to Alaska. For example, who will be President-elect Obama's nominee to be the Interior Secretary? and the sub-cabinet positions in Interior, because I suspect they're going to have obviously a much different attitude about public lands management and oil and gas drilling and that sort of thing than the Bush administration has had. You're going to have to see what sorts of people are put into place to deal with the issue, for example, of climate change. And in the area of, say, the Commerce Department, you're going to have to see who's in charge of the National Marine Fisheries Service. I mean, there's all sorts of things to look for, and this is the big time that there's going to be a turnover. It does sound like there could possibly be some Republicans pulled into the Obama administration, but we're going to have to see how that plays out. And then there's some very specific things. For example, I mean, who takes over this position of the as the federal coordinator for Alaska natural gas pipeline projects? Drew Pierce has had that, but she was a Republican, of course, and a Republican appointee in the Bush administration. So there will be a very specific job or two there that Alaskans are going to be very interested to see who fills.
Joel Southern is APRN's former Washington, D.C. correspondent. He now lives in Denmark. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, environmentalists react to the election results.
The Kane Palin campaign really tried to make this a referendum on drill, baby, drill. And you know what? They were not successful last night.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Republican Party suffered losses in the U.S. Congress, but they're optimistic about the possibility of retaining Alaska's House and Senate seats. The National Republican Congressional Committee saw about 20 House seats lost to Democrats last night, but committee spokesman Ken Spain says they're attributing Congressman Don Young's lead to Governor Sarah Palin's presence on the ticket as the Republican vice presidential candidate. Spain says while Young was polling behind his opponent, Democrat Ethan Berkowitz, Republican voters backed Young in the voters' booth.
There were a lot of predictions that were made in haste, it appears now, in regards to Alaska. But I think the real story here is Sarah Palin. The so-called Sarah Palin effect seemed to drive up turnout in the state of Alaska and helped a member of Congress, and at this time it appears a sitting United States senator, possibly across the finish line.
Spain says it's ironic that Palin may have helped Congressman Young retain his seat, since the two have been political antagonists. Palin supported her lieutenant governor, Sean Parnell's, bid for Young's seat in the August Republican primary, and Young has criticized Palin publicly. But Spain says, in the end, party loyalty won out.
While she and Congressman Young may have not exactly seen eye to eye on every occasion, they definitely saw eye to eye on the importance of this election, and we're very glad that that we were able to pull this one off.
Back in late August, when John McCain first announced Governor Palin would be his running mate, former Anchorage Daily News editorial page editor Larry Persily predicted her candidacy would help Don Young and Ted Stevens. Now it appears he may have been right. Persily says Palin's place on the ticket seems to have energized Alaska's hardcore Republican base.
Palin helped bring them out, and as long as they were in that voting booth, there's a good chance, better than not, they were going to go and check the box for Ted Stevens and Don Young. But looking at the election totals, a couple things are interesting. In 2004, George Bush carried Alaska over John Kerry with 61% of the vote, 35 to Kerry. In 2008, McCain-Palin, that same 61%, and Obama, 36%, which is pretty much the same as Kerry 4 years ago. So I guess the question is, having Palin there, John McCain still got the same percentage, 61%, as George Bush 4 years ago. So if there was a bounce, a positive effect from Palin, boy, he would have done really very poorly without her. But the other thing to look at is, we know now there's 50, 60,000 votes out there still to count, right? Absentees, questions, early vote. And that'll bring this year's vote total up to 275,000, 280,000, give or take. 4 years ago, 315,000 Alaskans voted in the presidential election here. So you've got 35,000-40,000 fewer votes this year than 4 years ago. So I scratch my head and think, well, if Palin excited Alaskans so much they came out to vote, how come 40,000 fewer Alaskans voted now than 4 years ago?
And Governor Palin returns to Alaska this evening. As she does return to the state, what do you think she faces?
Oh, I think she's got a lot of problems. I think, Governor Palin in her first 2 years picked off the easy, the low-hanging political fruit. She gave away money with the energy rebates. She kicked the oil companies again with taxes. She kicked the oil companies again with her plan for a gas line, which may or may not work. She put forth an ethics proposal. The legislature passed it after they made it better. You know, that was the easy stuff. That was the Sarah Palin campaigning against the Frank Murkowski legacy. That stuff's gone now. So now she's looking at oil prices that are half what they were a few months ago. And at today's prices, if they were to hold, we're back to a budget deficit. In Alaska politics, when you don't have enough money to make everyone happy in the budget, you have a problem. She's also promised Alaskans by December, she will have a comprehensive long-term statewide energy plan. Everyone who's tried that has found that is not easy. She's also promised Alaskans by December she would have the legislation needed to build the natural gas pipeline that she thinks should go from Cook Inlet to Fairbanks. I haven't met anyone who really believes that's a great idea. So the easy stuff's gone. The harder stuff's in front of her. She doesn't have the money. The Democrats in the legislature and the moderate Republicans are no longer feeling sweet and lovey with her as they maybe did before. She's going to have a tough couple years.
Larry Persily is former editorial page editor of the Anchorage Daily News and a former member of Governor Palin's administration. He lives in Washington, D.C. Sarah Palin does return to Alaska tonight, no longer a Republican vice presidential contender. Palin spokesman Bill McAllister says the governor will ride the McCain-Palin campaign plane back to Alaska tonight and will get back to work tomorrow. Palin will still have Secret Service protection for a few more days as she settles back into her life in Alaska. McAllister says the immediate priority will be the state budget.
It's coincidental, but this is the point at which the governor would normally get hands-on with the budget, and it just happens to fall in sync with the end of the campaign. This began in September with departments and agencies presenting their request to Karen Rehfeld, the director of the Office of Management and Budget, and she worked through all of those requests, and then in October began analyzing them and crunching those numbers, and as the governor returns, it's time for her to take a look at it and see what she wants to do exactly, particularly in light of the falling price of oil.
McAllister says the state's long-range energy plan is also due to be released in December.
And then I understand from Mike Nizek, who was in Arizona with the governor here the last couple of days, that they had a long talk about a whole list of things that she wants to do, and I'm not privy to that list, but I guess she's got plenty of ideas about things she wants to accomplish.
McAllister says he is eager to talk to Governor Palin about her experience on the campaign trail, and he says he is uncertain about how her time in the national political spotlight may change her governing style.
She's still going to be under quite a bit of national media scrutiny. We've had requests from Oprah, Letterman, Barbara Walters, 60 Minutes, on and on. This is just today. So there's still a great deal of interest in her, and I'm not sure what that means in terms of how she governs.
He does say that she has governed in a nonpartisan way in the past, and he doesn't think that will change.
The issues may end up being a little different than they were because some things have gotten resolved. Later this month, TransCanada will officially get the license for the gas line, and we'll be moving forward with the regulatory process there. We've settled the question of the oil production tax. We've had the ethics reform laws passed. So we're on to some new things, infrastructure, energy, and just, trying to be fiscally conservative with the budget.
The division that grew from political frustration over the investigation of what became known as Troopergate during the presidential campaign has strained the nonpartisan tone of the Palin administration. But McAllister says until it's clear how the next legislature will organize and who will be put in leadership roles, it's difficult to say how relations between the executive and legislative branches of state government may be.
But we note with some encouragement that Democratic legislators came forward when there was an erroneous National Associated Press story on the gas line. Several Democrats came forward and said, you know, that was just wrong, that it mischaracterized the way the process worked and what the governor had achieved. And we took that as a very positive sign that we could move forward and work together and, you know, not lick old wounds.
McAllister says supporters and media are invited out to meet with the governor tonight when her plane arrives, sometime between 8 and 10 p.m. at the Signature Hangar west of Kulis Air Base in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business, and by the University of Alaska, home of award-winning faculty, students, and alumni, and offering 500 different degrees and certificates. Find one that's right and do something major. Information at alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
Democrats may have had a tough time at the top of the ticket last night in Alaska, but they gained some seats in Alaska's legislature. APRN's Juneau correspondent Dave Donaldson joins us now to talk about the new landscape at the state capitol. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Dave, how many races are still too close to call?
Well, we've got actually six races in the House and one race in the Senate I would not be comfortable on. What we're doing is we're going just based on the number of votes that are not counted, where we're taking in kind of, there's a general rule of thumb that translates into somewhere around 4% difference. So if the races are, there's a 4% or less difference in the race between the two candidates at this point, then we got, you know, they're too close. And right now we're at six in the House and one in the Senate. Meanwhile, we count them, though, right at the moment as to who is leading. And of those six in the House, for example, there are four of them have the Democrats are in charge, are controlling right now. They are winning. Republicans, two of them in the Senate seat, Democrat, and one of that was a Democrat is leading in that one too. So we count them as if they have them right now, but things could change either way.
So Dave, let's talk about the Senate first. What happened with those races?
Okay, the one that is still pending is Democratic. If you count that as a Democratic final vote, we have an increase in Democrats of one seat in the Senate. So that now does take it to, as Hollis French pointed out last night on our election night broadcast, it's 10 to 10. In other words, Republicans, Democrats, they've got to somehow work out and how they're going to work together again this year. So we're still looking definitely at a Senate coalition of some kind. I do know that they were meeting this morning, or they were meeting today. They were arriving into Anchorage this morning. Saw several of them at breakfast and some more at the hotel, and they're ready to start meeting. And we should have perhaps something on that within a matter of, if not today, probably by tomorrow sometime.
And what about the House?
Okay, the House basically. In all of the stuff that's gone on here and all of the noise and hoopla that happens during an election season, the House picked up one seat for the Democrats. Republicans lost one. You know, basically, it doesn't change the balance of much. It changes a little bit of strength there, but one seat difference, they can live with it. I know that there are talks going on. As a matter of fact, again, at breakfast this morning, I saw some of them, Republicans and Democrats, talking as to who's going to go where and what they're doing. And of course, the minute I walked up, they stopped talking about those things. But that's okay. We know that they are talking, and that's what really matters.
Well, before the lawmakers clammed up this morning when you met up with them at breakfast time, did you get any early word on how the legislature might organize for next session?
I think we're looking at Nikiski Representative Mike Chenault, former or current chair of the Finance Committee, as being the Speaker of the House. His organization, who he puts into what committee chairmanships and memberships on committees and so forth, that'll change. We don't know what that is. But he will be the Speaker. I don't see any way around that one. House, I mean, in the Senate, though, hey, we're 10 and 10. You put a, you know, you've had a Senate president who was a Republican for the last 2 years. You put a Democrat there, and then let the bipartisan coalition have a Republican on the Rules Committee, or vice versa. I mean, I just don't know, and that's something that anybody I talked to didn't know that either, and that's perfectly okay. They will work those things out. There are some things that it's better off that a reporter doesn't watch, and one of them is organization of the House and Senate.
All right, Dave. Well, thanks for that update.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from Juneau. Leading environmental groups gathered in Washington, D.C. this afternoon to weigh in on yesterday's election results. They celebrated Senator Barack Obama's win for the presidency, as well as some of the Senate and House seats Democrats picked up across the country. The group said their goals for the next congressional session will include working to fight global warming and bringing about recovery for the climate alongside with economic recovery. The National Political Director for the Sierra Club, Kathy Duvall, said Americans voted for Obama's energy plan, which includes investing in clean energy and setting goals for renewable energy use. Duvall said that ended up trumping the plan of Senator John McCain and his running mate, Governor Sarah Palin, who stumped on a platform of expanding oil drilling.
Yesterday, a new Energy for America trumped Drill Baby Drill. In a lot of ways, the McCain-Palin campaign really tried to make this a referendum on Drill Baby Drill. And you know what? They were not successful last night.
While conservationists applauded Democratic wins in the Senate and states like Colorado and New Hampshire, they admitted they didn't get a clean sweep of pro-environmental candidates across the country. President of the League of Conservation Voters, Gene Karpinski, noted that Alaskans turned out at the polls for Republicans, Congressman Don Young, and Senator Ted Stevens.
If Senator Stevens and Mr. Young are reelected, the good news is there'll be a much smaller caucus of anti-environmental legislators, and it's shrunk considerably in both the House and the Senate. So they'll be in a smaller minority, and hopefully they will not be able, especially in the Senate, be able to block the kind of pro-environment, pro-energy, pro-green economy initiatives that we've been talking about.
Senator Stevens and Congressman Young are both on the League's 2008 Dirty Dozen list as being politicians with voting records against environmental issues like energy conservation, fighting climate change, and raising air quality standards. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from APRN's Libby Casey in Washington, D.C., Dave Donaldson in Juneau, and Steve Heimel and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, a proud supporter of cultural activities that enrich the lives of all Alaskans. Wells Fargo, the next stage.
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
And by Alaska Conservation Solutions, providing ways to measure your carbon footprint and reduce your energy consumption. At AlaskaConservationSolutions.com. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.